Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Joe, my pronouns are they, them.
And my name is Matt, my pronouns are he, him.
Hi, Matt!
Hi, Matt!
How's it going, bud?
Doing well, how are you guys?
Good, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. So before we get into our, you know, big main topic, let's talk about all the things we've been reading recently. I had this thing where I thought I hadn't read anything since we last recorded because I'm still reading most of the things that I talked about last time. And then I pulled up my story graph and I was like, oh no, I've read a lot.
That always happens to me.
Every time. So I finished Come Up and Served Cold, which I had started last time.
Yes.
I finished that. It's awesome. Like, Tor.com novellas can't go wrong. Like, I trust them implicitly. And this one is no different. It's super fun. Prohibition era with magic and people who can turn into animals. Ooh. And there's bad people doing bad things, and someone's gonna try to take them down, and it is, and I don't want to give too much away because it's a novella, so it all happens really quickly.
Yeah.
But the characters are awesome. I love them. It feels like the type of thing that we could see more from some of these characters. Like, it definitely ends with a very sort of, like, open-ended, like, mm-hmm. Okay, we could see this main character again, and I wouldn't be mad about it.
Nice.
Super, super
fun. I'm really
fun.
Excited about
yeah,
that one.
It's really good. So I finished that. I also read A Mirror Mended, which is the...
Also excited about that
one. Yes, it's the sequel to A Spindle Splintered by Alex E. Harrow. And so in A Spindle Splintered, it is, Sleeping Beauty meets the multiverse, essentially. And I won't give spoilers, but it's essentially fairy tales in the multiverse. And this one is the same main character, only this time instead of being pulled into another Sleeping Beauty tale, which she's been cycling through all these tales trying to, like, save the princess, she gets pulled into a Snow White tale.
Ooh.
It's awesome. It has the same, like, you know, humor that the first one has. Alex is very funny, and she sneaks in internet jokes wherever she can. Like, she quotes that viral YouTube video, her sister was a witch, bro. It's so like on, like, page four. Like, I was like, yes, Alex. So that one is fantastic. I loved that. That comes out later this year. So, so excited for that. And I also read Husband Material, which is the sequel to Boyfriend Material by Alexis Hall, which is adorable. It's super cute.
Do you have a physical arc of that?
No, oh. I did. I did an e-arc of that one. I don't know if they have sent out physical arcs of that one.
Sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted.
No, that's fine. No, I think I saw that the publisher was just about to send out physical arcs of that one, so... Our fellow
I
want to
read that one.
It's really cute, and it's told through three or four different weddings.
Oh, cute.
So it's like friends or exes or whatever, but it's all these different weddings, and the story is broken up into those weddings, and it is so cute. And it ended, and I was like, that is so on brand for them. I love that ending. Like, it's great. Super cute. I also read Ring Shout by P. Jelly Clark, which I've been meaning to read forever since it came out. And I finally read it for the Jack of All Graves book club, which I will link to in the show notes. It's awesome. It is better than I even thought it would be. It's literally the KKK... There are the human clan members, and then there are demonic Ku Kluxes. Super, super nasty, and there's this, like, bigger evil that is using all the members of the KKK, both the demons and the humans, using them to, accomplish this bigger, hateful plan. And so you have that on one side, and then you have your main characters who are, like, monster hunters. Mm. And they're going to take it down. And it's awesome. There's a magical sword that calls on the spirit of former, like, slaves and chiefs and people who were wronged by white people, and it, like, it's fantastic. So good. It's so cathartic to read. I loved it so much. It was so good. And then I'm in the middle of a bunch of things. I'm about halfway through the new Lisa Scottolini book, What Happened to the Bennets, which is very compelling. She's going to be on the podcast this month. And so it opens with the death of a family member, but it's a murder. They're essentially kind of carjacked, but it feels like maybe more than that. And the eldest daughter dies.
Okay.
And that's how it opens. And I literally spent like the first four or five chapters just with tears in my eyes, because you're in the family's grief, right? And so that family goes into witness protection, and then the FBI gets involved and is like, this is bigger than you think. And so you're with this family in witness protection, and they're starting to figure things out and figure out connections, and it's unfolding in a really cool way. When I thought it was just, oh, this is just an interesting story about a family in witness protection and, like, how they're dealing with that, and also the grief of the loss of their daughter, and, like, they can't go to her funeral because they're in witness protection, and, like, oh, this is a really interesting book. And then it started to become a mystery, and I was like, oh, this is even better. So that's really good. That book comes out. That will be out by the time this podcast goes up. And then I also just started the new Laura Clary book. It's called Idiots, Marriage, Motherhood, Milk, and Mistakes. She's an internet person. She does, like, skits and stuff online. And she has two beautiful children and was very open on the internet about her pregnancies and her birth and all this stuff. And so this book, she has another book, Idiot, singular. But I haven't read that one, but this one is about the births of her children, and I'm literally on chapter 3, and I've already had moments where I've been reading it in the office and laughing so hard that, like, Michael is giving me weird looks, and I can't tell him what it's about because she's, like, graphically describing her birth, and I'm like, I don't want to have this conversation with you. It's hilarious. I think in particular, people who have given birth will really love this one because she comes at it from such a hilarious point of view. And, like, she had two fairly traumatic births. So it's not like, oh, she had a perfect birth and I'm going to be, like, upset by it. It's like, no, she had pretty scary births and is just hilarious about them. And I was reading it and I was like, oh, that sounds like mine. Cool. She's so funny. She's such a funny writer. And then the last one that I just started is called Nightmare Fuel, The Science of Horror Films by Nina Nesseth. We are in the process of finalizing the details for an event for that one that I will be moderating. That'll be, I think, this summer. We'll have more details on the website once we iron out everything, but I've been reading that one, and it's really cool so far. As someone who loves horror films, it's really cool to read about the science of them. And then we got in the White Box, which the publisher, White Box, they send us all kinds of ARCs and promotional materials. And I grabbed Book of Night by Holly Black, Ghost Eaters by Clay McLeod Chapman, and the new Jasmine Guillory called By the Book. I have no idea what any of them are about, but I'm excited for them. What have you guys been up to?
Yeah, so I've had a bit of a reading slump lately, but I've read a couple things that I've really, really liked. The first one is I Kiss Shara Wheeler by Casey McQuiston, which is their YA debut, and It's so good.
Oh, good.
I loved it so much. I keep describing it to everybody as a sapphic John Green book.
Oh, I love that.
And, like, either that speaks to you or it doesn't, but, like, that is everything I needed as a teenager. Yeah. Like, it is about... The main character is a girl who lives in Alabama, queer, has two moms, but it's Alabama. It's mm-hmm. kind of... She goes to a Catholic school.
Oof.
And she has her group of friends and everything, but there's this one popular girl, Cheryl Wheeler, and they're in competition to become a valedictorian.
Ooh.
And Chloe has been kind of obsessed with her for their entire high school career because, like... She's perfect and everything. And right before prom, Shara kisses her and then disappears. And leaves notes.
What?
For Chloe, for her boyfriend, and for the boy who lives next door. And so the three of them have to come together and figure out what's going on. And everybody's queer and falls in love, and it's incredible.
I'm obsessed.
That is very similar to Looking for Alaska.
That is
almost too similar.
Yeah, like, it is, it's very, there is a point where the main character goes, why did she decide to turn herself into a John Green character? And it was like,
that's
okay,
so good.
Thank you for acknowledging it, Casey, because that is exactly what's happening, and it was great. And heartwarming and lovely. So
here for
that
it.
One comes out in May and is going to be great. And then the other one that I'm currently reading is Just Like Home by Sarah Gailey,
ooh,
who wrote Magic for Liars and The Echo Wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. Ryan, you are going to love
I'm
this
so
book
excited.
So
I
much.
Downloaded the e-arc of it.
Oh my god. So it is about a woman who her father was a serial killer, and she, after he was caught, she moved out when she was very young, and her mom has turned their house into a museum.
Oh.
And lets artists and tour groups and people come in and, like, commune with the spirits and, like,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now her mom is dying, so she needs to go back to this house where all these horrible things happened.
Yikes.
And that is, to some extent, preserved so people can look
yeah.
at it. And so she moves back into her childhood bedroom. And there's something moving around under the bed.
Nope! Yes!
And it's right above the basement where her dad did all the murders.
I am so here for this.
Oh my god. There's one point where something is dragging her quilt off of her bed.
Yes.
Slowly. And at that moment, my little monster, Gibby, decides to run full under my bed and hits the side of my blanket, and so my blanket gets tugged, and I lost it. I was like, what is happening? And then I realized it was just this terror running through my apartment.
That but timing, though.
The tension is so good.
Oh, good.
And, like, for a good portion of the book, you don't really know what her father did.
Gotcha.
And so there's a lot of, like, speculation, and her it flashes back to when she was a kid kind of figuring out what's happening navigating her relationship with her parents and how much she loved her dad.
Aww.
And and she is starting to find little notes around the house left by him about how much he loved her. And
wow.
Yeah, it's a lot of, like, family secrets, trauma.
Ugh.
But super scary. And
oh, I'm so
really
into this.
Good. I really, 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 really like it. I'm about 75% of the way through.
Nice.
I have no idea where it's headed. I don't know. Like, I genuinely don't know if this is ghost sight, but it's great. Yeah.
Ooh, yay.
So, those are the two that I've read recently that I've really loved.
I have a similar story to the one you just told. In, like, the 80s, my grandmother was reading Pet Sematary, and at the same time, she was just, like, outside doing yard work, and the cat walked into the street, and she just saw it got, like, smacked by a car. And every, you know, you see that, and you just assume that the cat's dead, and, you know, don't go looking for it. So she went to bed, and, you know, dinner with the family, and in the morning, the cat's scratching at the door, because it survived.
Oh, God.
And oh, my God.
They all thought it, so...
oh, that's horrifying.
That's amazing. Yeah. Man, I love when spooky things line up with other spooky things. It's the best. Matt, what have you been reading recently?
I just finished To Paradise by Hanya Yanagihara. And amazing. I don't think I have loved a book as much as I love as I loved that.
That's great.
I think when you, like, love a book, it's different than being, like, I liked a book.
Yeah.
Because there were times where I was really angry at it. It was for almost sure. like, it was almost like a loved one, kind of, where it's just, like, for context, To Paradise is a really long book.
Yeah.
There was times where I was, like, gonna scream at it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when I finished, I just hugged it. Aww. And sobbed.
Yeah.
It was just an absolutely beautiful book, and I'll do my best to describe it, but it's so wide and complex. So there's really, it's three different books in three different fictional worlds, and they really couldn't be any more related. The first being set in 1893, in this alternate version of America. The second is being set in just America as it is, but in the 90s. And then the third being set in 2093. Mm. But the thing that's weird is that it's the same cast of characters in each different setting.
Oh, okay.
And the same relationships, and not necessarily the same conflicts, but their same responses to these outward pressures are very similar. And it's just absolutely brilliantly written. Mm. And I loved every moment about it. Every moment of it. It was... I just loved that book so much.
I'm so excited to read that one because I think I've talked on the podcast here, but I read A Little Life, which was Hanya Yanagihara's previous book, and similarly, I loved it so much, and also it was the hardest thing I've ever read. Mm-hmm. It was the most tragic, heartbreaking, upsetting story I've ever read. And when it ended, I was like, that was brilliant. A very similar, like, things would happen to the main character and I would be so mad about it. But I'd be like, okay, I gotta keep reading, though, because it's... Yeah, yeah. No, I'm excited to... Because I have To Paradise and I started reading it. And I read, like, the first couple chapters and was sucked right in. And I was like, this is amazing. And then I had to put it down to read other things for, like, interviews and stuff and haven't picked it back up yet. But gonna do that now.
Yeah. I think with – and I haven't read A Little Life, and I really should. I think I'll buy it in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't think, as tragic.
Okay.
As a little less, it's not. Good. It's not like it's not heartbreaking in the like horrible things are happening.
Yeah.
Theme to the books we've been reading.
Yes.
Recently.
As
much as what's really heartbreaking about it is just how passionate the characters are for the people they love, and just how tenuous the relationships are.
Mm.
So you're just like shaking the whole time because you're so worried about like what each person's gonna do. And it was a wonderful book, and I loved it so much.
Oh, that's amazing.
I also read, I finished Song of Solomon by Toni Morrison, and you don't need me to tell you that. It's phenomenal. I read it for school, I think. And then also, what was for good context, I also listened to Recitative, the short story.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
That was, I really liked it. Cool. It comes with the Zadie Smith introduction.
Oh, yeah.
Which is half of it. which I think I learned more from than the story itself.
Cool.
And because, you know, Zadie Smith's bringing all these other things. It's almost just an essay that happens to feature yeah. recitative in it. Yeah. And it was really interesting to compare the two stories mm-hmm. In just about how Toni Morrison, it very much like Hanya Yanagihara, asks a lot of her readers. Mm-hmm. And some things, not necessarily with Hanya Yanagihara, but Toni Morrison leaves things ambiguous on purpose, yeah. which is really just a testament to how good a writer she is, but is also incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
And it's very much done on purpose in recitative, and it's a good comparison between the two.
Mm.
And for fun, I was listening to the audiobook Cuyahoga by Pete Beatty,
nice.
And that's a lot of fun. It's a mock American legend about Big Sun, told through the eyes of his younger brother, Medium Sun. and it's so great because you can never tell like what's real or not in it, because
yeah.
it's almost just kind of like one of those folk stories where, like, you know, Paul Bunyan ate like 3,000 pancakes before
yes.
cutting down every tree.
Right.
It's stuff like to keep Lake Erie from storming so much, he tried to drink all of it until Erie succumbed.
That's awesome.
Have you looked at that book, like the physical book?
Oh, it's so weird.
Yeah, it has so many weird little illustrations.
I haven't, like, flipped
yeah.
through it.
It's each heading of every page is different.
Oh.
It's so
interesting.
Emily recommended it to me.
I was
yeah,
going to say,
that's how I
did it.
Yeah.
And when I told her I got Libro FM
yeah.
had like a special on it. So that's when I got it. Just to fit it in my reading schedule. Emily was concerned that I would actually miss out a lot on it, so I think, but even though that's my for fun book recently, I think I'll probably end up like buying a copy just so I can reread it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome. Cool. So our main topic, we were brainstorming different things, and Matt, you had an idea, you had some thoughts about things like award winners and things like that. So I wonder if you want to, like, give us the little pitch for our topic today.
Yeah. So a little while ago, I was in Cape Cod and just poking my head in some other bookstores.
How dare you?
I know.
Other bookstores?
yeah, this place was small. I don't think I'll go back. but, and they, you know, every bookstore organizes things differently. And they had, fiction, mystery, just in, kind of separated by genres, in nonfiction. And then they also had a literature shelf.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. Which really bothered me.
Yeah.
Because, I would look at some of the books on the shelf and I'd be like, why is Ayn Rand here?
Mm.
And then I would look over at the fiction bookshelf and why is, like, Juno Diaz and Jennifer Egan
right.
not considered? Because these are both,
yeah.
you know, they're Pulitzer Prize winning
yeah.
authors. People love their books. They're regularly taught in schools, and I think for good reason, I don't think they teach Ayn Rand in schools.
Yep. I had to read Ayn Rand in school. Anyway, this is not important.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Thanks, Bo High.
Wowie zowie.
Well, of all places.
I have luckily avoided having to read.
We read the shortest one, Anthem, so, like, at least
okay.
it.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, and that got me thinking, and yeah, it made me really angry that some authors that I really liked were on literature, and then some authors I also really liked were not considered that. And then I was asking myself, like, why are the books that are considered literature part of it? And I was thinking, it's like, well, obviously, you know, there are books that do and don't have literary merit, and I think that can be confused a lot with whether or not it's good,
mm-hmm.
which is not just a bad thing to do with books, but just with anything, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking when we were talking about this, I was thinking about, do you remember a few years ago the Oscars announced that they were going to do a popular movie category?
Oh, God,
and
yes.
it, like, got completely panned and they decided not to.
They were like, never mind,
because
sorry.
Everybody was pissed. But it kind of feels like that sometimes when people are trying to break down
yeah.
genres and be like, well, this is literary and this is,
yeah, this is and regular. Like, I, you know, and I will use, when describing books, like, I will definitely categorize something as, oh, this is more like literary fiction, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I hate the gatekeeping that happens among readers, like, in the reading community. There is so much gatekeeping. And I do think it's getting better.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is more typical with older readers, but there's this, like, pretentious attitude of, well, you're not a real reader unless you read literary fiction, and, like, yes, if you read genre fiction, then, oh, that just doesn't count. And it's, like, so frustrating.
Yeah, and I feel like I have even noticed TikTok being, like, the newest book thing is, like, there is definitely a divide, and I think because people have been so pretentious and snobby about literary fiction, it has caused people who read genre fiction to, like, be like, no, literary fiction is boring, and you're pretentious, and you're annoying, and I don't want to engage with that, and I get that, but then I'm like, okay, but I like both. I like genre fiction, and I really like literary fiction, and, like, they give me different things, and I think that's what people, when they are dividing things, are not thinking about, is that these books just serve different purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I don't think, you know, I think it's fine to, you know, describe something as literary fiction, mm-hmm. something that, you know, wouldn't fit into another fiction genre. It wouldn't fit into sci-fi or fantasy or mystery. But, you know, to use it as a genre, fine. But to put it up on a pedestal, mm-hmm. and say that, well, this is literary, it's highbrow fiction. It's like, okay, but, like, again, people read both. Like, you know, so, yeah, that's so interesting. I can't imagine. And, like, how would you even separate out and curate a literary fiction section? Like, what would you put it? Like, I could see having, like, a classics section. Yeah.
We have it happen a lot where people come in and they'll be like, where are your historical fiction books, mm-hmm. or where, like, things that we don't have separated out? And they'll be like, well, why not? And I mean, partially there's space issues, but also, like, where are we drawing these lines? How are we defining, like, we've recently done a romance section, and, like, there are still books that sometimes are in fiction where I'm like, oh, I don't know. I feel like I would have put that in romance.
Right.
So, yeah, kind of genre is a lot less clear-cut than people seem to want it to be.
Yeah, and I mean, even with our well-established sections, like sci-fi fantasy, we have a lot of things in fiction that should probably be in sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah.
But part of it is a space issue, and part of it is because people don't go looking in sci-fi fantasy, mm-hmm. for these, like Neil Gaiman. Mm-hmm. People look for him in fiction, not sci-fi fantasy, which is fascinating because most of his books would qualify.
Well, that's really interesting. When I was doing a little research about this, this was not always the case.
Right. Because
before, mm-hmm. I don't know, like, what year exactly, but before, I think when him and Terry Pratchett were working together, mm-hmm. a lot, they both really complained about not being taken seriously by the literary, mm-hmm. community.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, they're both wonderful authors in their own rights. But, you know, they're just getting kind of, like, slammed onto the fantasy shelf, which, when they're trying to attract a certain community, they're not gravitating towards that.
Yeah, and, like, that's the other frustrating thing, is that they're, you know, it feels like when authors are put into genre fiction, these people who view literary fiction as, you know, better, mm-hmm. than everything else, they see genre fiction as less than, and so there are amazing authors that get kind of glanced over because it's like, oh, it's a sci-fi book. Oh, it's a fantasy book.
Yeah.
And this happens over and over and over again with female writers of fantasy in particular. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it must be YA. I'm not going to read that. That must be for teenagers. No! Mm-hmm. Friends! women can write fantasy for adults and it can be really good. So we actually have a large chunk of our female fantasy authors are in fiction.
Yeah.
Which because, is, you know.
Yeah. And it's a complicated thing. And yeah, I think we've talked. I know Matt and I both really like prizes. That
yes.
sounds like a weird way of putting that. But like, I read every year, I will read the winner of the Booker Prize at least. Yeah. But I usually read a collection of the shortlist, mm-hmm. depending on what's interesting to me and like whether or not I'm in grad school and have time to read all of them. And I know, Matt, you have like thoughts about the Pulitzer, and I think there is this weird thing where people use prizes as a way of like sorting books and mm-hmm. like, well, okay, but would it be nominated for a Pulitzer? It's not like it's not one of those books. Like a term I hear a lot yeah. more lately has been upmarket fiction.
Okay.
Which I tend to think of as kind of like the Reese's Book Club.
Gotcha.
Books where it's like it's popular. So it's not literary fiction. It's upmarket fiction. It's like, you know, Taylor Jenkins Reid and Where the Crawdad Sings and like those sorts of books being like, okay, but we need to separate those from like the real literary fiction. And it's like, okay, but what's happening here and why
and
is
like,
it happening?
Why? Like this is my thing that it always comes down to is like, why are people gatekeeping books? Mm. It's books. Read what you want.
Yeah.
Read whatever you want. There's nothing that's like, this happens a lot with, you know, I used to be sort of like the YA person in the bookstore mm-hmm. for many years.
Yeah.
And
I think I'm one of the YA people now.
Yeah.
Now it's almost everyone is.
We have a lot more.
We have a lot more now. It used to be just me for a long time. And, you know, I always felt like I had to defend my position mm-hmm. as a person who was no longer a young adult but still reading young adult. Like I always felt like I had to defend that section and be like, no, there's actually really good books here. Like, and that's so frustrating. Like, I don't think anyone should ever have to defend their choice to read a certain genre mm-hmm. or a certain type of book. Like, read what you want to read. It's not hurting anyone.
Yeah. So I guess I want to talk, because Matt, I know you read a lot of literary fiction, which I do too, but maybe less than you do. You probably read the most out of the people at the store currently, I would say.
Sort of primary.
Maybe, probably.
So, like, what is it that appeals to you about that genre? Like, I'll talk about mine too, but, like, what?
I think, so sometimes, I really like to dust the bookstore because really it's just browsing.
Yes.
And with masks and all, I don't get like dust in my eyes or anything. So that's
nice. He's cracked
yeah.
the code.
Yeah. Glad somebody likes doing it.
And I'll just talk to, I'll find books and, you know, Sam's walking by filling the bookshelves and I'll just be like sharing these books that I'm meaning to read but haven't had the time yet. And then one time she asked me, what do you read for fun?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't have time for fun. so that's probably why I read the most literary fiction. It's just what I gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that is what the easiest way to differentiate literary fiction and genre fiction is that genre fiction is more plot-based, whereas literary fiction is more character development.
Okay.
And
interesting. Okay.
You know, I have a lot of friends who really like Game of Thrones, and they love to complain about how there's no ending. And when I read a book like To Paradise, I'm not spoiling the ending by saying there is none.
But the idea of resolution isn't necessarily.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's not as important. It's if the characters have achieved their, you know, almost the journey that they goes on inside them,
mm-hmm.
that's enough for me.
Yeah.
And I think you know, if that doesn't happen and there's a good reason for it, it's you know, there's exceptions to every rule. And it's just, there's, like, I got into literary fiction when I started reading Dave Eggers 4 years ago. Mm. And he's, Dave Eggers, I think, who's, yeah, he's phenomenal. I think John Green put it as, if you're looking, if, on the topic of, like, of people who are 20-somethings and they're still reading YA, and they're like, I don't want to stop reading YA books, but it's time for, it might be time for big kid books.
Right.
Dave Eggers is almost like the bridge.
I would agree with that, yeah.
Because he's not writing, it's not like reading Toni Morrison where these long, really difficult sentences to like comprehend. It's very, he's just kind of like, it's also very, very funny.
Yeah. I love him. Love him.
and it's hard because Dave Eggers was not on the on the literature display, and
that's crazy.
And he's won the National Book Critics Circle Award. He's been a finalist for every other prize. And it's like, why not?
Right.
And it
kind of feels like, again, pulling in the Oscars. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. Well, if you think about like the Circle and the Every, it's like, oh, well, there's it's futuristic and there's like almost a sci-fi element to it because they're, it's all about like technology and computers, and it's like, it's again, it's this like looking down upon like, oh, it's fun, therefore, and it's like, well, that's not
so I don't know if you remember this specific interaction, Ryan, but last spring, we did, like, a brunch with some authors for Indie Bookstore Day.
Yes.
And our events coordinator, Elizabeth, came up with the very good question of if you could eat the heart of another author and possess their skills, like, who would it be and why?
Yeah.
Which, if you know Elizabeth, this is a very Elizabeth question. And one of, and I can't remember which of our authors it was, but she said that it would be Ishiguro because he can write sci-fi but be taken seriously like a literary author. And there are those breakthrough people who, like, you're like, no, this is very obviously sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, we're like, it's like fancy sci-fi.
Right.
And, like, a lot of people I know have had issues with, like, The Handmaid's Tale. Is that sci-fi or is it not? Is it speculative fiction? Is it not? Because they're like, well, but it's good. It's literary, so it can't be it can't be genre fiction. It's like, well, yeah, it can.
It totally can.
Yeah.
It's a dystopian novel. Like, my hackles get raised when, I mean, it depends on the customer, but every once in a while, I will overhear someone talking about, oh, well, this is literary fiction, and they just sound so pretentious, and I'm like, could you not, like, read something fun, and it can still be literary fiction, but fun, like, I don't understand why we have taken the term literary fiction and made it be like, oh, it has to be this, like, boring, complicated, hard to read, only the smartest people can enjoy it type thing. It's like, no, it's that doesn't have to be the definition.
Well, and I kind of think in terms of why I gravitate towards a lot of literary fiction, and again, I read kind of all over the board, and there are even within literary fiction different subgroups and whatever, but like the Booker Prize particularly, why I love that one is it's weird, new, inventive books.
Mm.
And I think sometimes that is taken as, oh, well, it, you know, it's a difficult book, or it's like, you know, you need to be smart to read it or understand it or whatever. And it's like, no, it's just like, it's kind of like exercising your brain. You're like, oh, this is not formatted like I'm traditionally used to a book being formatted. I have to do some work and, like, think about it. And I find that very fun.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. And I think, separating it out and being like, well, no, you have to, like, be a very serious person to enjoy it. It's like, not really. Like, not all of them. There are definitely, and there are a lot of, like, Booker winners that are just, like, really funny and weird. Like, deeply weird books. And I think there is an element of, like, people taking the fun out of literary fiction. It's like, no, it can be really enjoyable.
Yeah.
I think the whole, the idea of gatekeeping in, when it comes to fiction especially, nonfiction is a topic for a different podcast.
That's a whole other thing, yeah.
Is that there's, like, a deep human desire to be like, is this good or not?
Yeah.
Which is, might be the case with other forms of media, but it is not the case with books. Mm-hmm. And this is where my main problem with book talk and more mainstream BookTube and especially Goodreads.
Yeah, I have a lot of issues with Goodreads.
And I think it's because we want to know that our, you know, our monetary and our time investment in this book is going to be worth it.
Yep.
And what I believe is that bad books aren't published.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that, you know, what do you get out of a book? And I think, to bring up A Little Life is probably, I would say, the literary fiction book that has made its way through most of the internet book talking spaces, just because of how controversial it was.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of people who said it's terrible because it makes me feel bad. And
right.
And that's, well, that's not why, you know, it's terrible. And or no, it's not terrible, but it's not, like, making it bad.
That doesn't, it's like, whereas, like, I, a bookseller, would hand this to someone and be like, you have to read this, it's the saddest thing I've ever read, and I loved every second of it. Like, it made me want to die, and I loved it, here you go.
And
like,
it's okay if you're a person who doesn't want to read that kind of thing. It's just a different, it just serves a different need. It's not necessarily good or bad. It's not that you're deep because you like being sad, or you're shallow because you like to read romance.
Right.
Like, it just...
Yeah, and it's just, it's especially, because I think there's definitely been, especially after the Jonathan Franzen...
I wanted to talk about this.
...read thing happened, I think that there's been a little introspective thinking, because where that I think, was a very interesting squabble, because after everyone freaked out about Freedom... and Time called him, like, the great American author. It's Jennifer Reed, and we have a paperback by her called Good in Bed.
Okay.
And that tells you what kind of books she writes. And so what she did, it's like, New York Times hates chick lit. We don't get the same attention. It's mainly very, very masculine. And the way Jonathan Franzen responded was, yes, that is a genuine problem that we really need to be addressing. But maybe a better person should be confronting us about that. Should be confronting this community about that.
That man! Because, see, this isn't the Franzen thing I wanted to talk about, actually.
Oh, my God. What did he do?
Because we talked about upmarket fiction, we talked about, like, celebrity book clubs. So the thing, like, I know Franzen for, I think, is the Oprah thing.
Yes.
Which, there's a really good episode of the podcast, Decoder Ring. It's a Slate podcast about that whole situation and, like, how it happened that, for people who aren't aware, it was, Oprah was doing her book club. She wanted to pick, The Corrections by Jonathan Franzen. This was, like, 2001, somewhere in the early aughts. And I think he agreed to initially and then, like, backed out and said some things in interviews of being, like, kind of disparaging Oprah's readers, basically. And so it was a very big dividing line of people being like, well, good for him, he didn't sell out.
So I this is more of my, this could be a long extended rant about how internet discussions are super unhealthy.
Because
because when I first read, I got really excited when Crossroads came out, just because it looked really good. I hadn't read any Franzen.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did some research just because I want to make sure I'm not reading books by Nazis. And then that came up, and that, you know, that really disturbed me, because the initial first comment was that He agreed to do it, and then the publisher was like, okay, now we're going to put the Oprah's Book Club stamp on it.
Yes.
And he said, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And that was, and it was because he wanted, what he said, right, was that he wanted men to read the book.
That's what it was. Yes, good. Was. Okay, thank
and,
you.
For... Lord.
And then, in response, Oprah pulled it. She said, I don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable, so we're just going to pull it and move on to the next book.
Yeah.
And then what people don't know, because everyone dropped it after that, is that they made up, and his next book, Freedom, was on Oprah's book club.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
See, this is the problem with the internet, because because it's like, this is, we don't care, because it's not as,
it's
you know,
not
makeups
as
aren't as juicy.
Shiny and exciting to talk about.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think, and I hate to argue against genre fiction, but the whole point of genre fiction is to put books into categories, which makes which is inherently gatekeeping. And I think even when you put book club stamps on books, I talked to my stepdad about when I was researching that, and he was like, if there's an Oprah book club thing on it, I would read it. And I think that might be more of a problem about men, and maybe too much judging a book by its cover. But if you look at the paperback edition of The Corrections Now, it, keep in mind, it won the National Book Award. It was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Usually these are things that people would stamp all over the book, so to let you know. It doesn't have any of that.
Oh, interesting. Huh. He didn't put any stickers on it.
He didn't put any stickers on it.
Interesting. Okay.
So, I think this is, it's more of that is, there's this issue of gatekeeping of, like, what is good, what is not. And I think this is more of, this is a little bit a problem of just people's nature, and it's definitely a thing that publishers take advantage of.
And but like, I definitely have that sort of like internalized judginess that I will, you know, immediately override, but I do have like a gut reaction when I see like a Reese's book club. I'm like, but then I'm like, well, no, I like Reese Witherspoon and she reads good books.
Yeah, like I've read, even if I've read like 5 books that are in her book club, and but like these are all fantastic, and then I see it again and I'm like, and it's like, no,
it's a weird thing. Yeah.
And like, I feel like I get this from a lot of customers, and I get it because I just don't like things like changes to the cover, but obviously I don't mind when there's an award sticker on it, but like, I have a lot of conversations with customers about the books with the not stickers stickers for the book clubs, where like they start printing it, the cover with the medallion, I guess, on it. But like, what is it that we hate about it? And I'm not saying that you shouldn't, because I also am not loving it, but is an interesting thing, because we don't have a problem with having like Caldecott medals or us being like winner of the Booker Prize, but
and it's so funny because the first one that came to mind is the stupid like soon to be a major motion picture. I don't care.
Yep.
Have you ever...
I don't care that it's going to be a major motion picture. Give me a bookmark that says that. I don't care. It doesn't need to be on the cover. But by the same token, if it was just a sticker, I probably wouldn't peel it off.
See, I bought...
I don't know if I would.
I bought all the Series of Unfortunate Events books because I had not kept mine from childhood right around when the Netflix one came out. And they all had the sticker on it, and I peeled them off, all of them. But I do also think there is an element there, and, you know, I am very likely to do it too, but being like, well, I'm not reading it because of the show. I don't want people to think that I'm reading this because it's going to be a Netflix show, because like, I'm reading it because I know good books, and like, this isn't, and even if you acknowledge that that's kind of silly intellectually, it still is an element of, I think, why we feel this way, is being like, well, I'm not picking this because Reese Witherspoon told me to.
Yeah.
I'm picking it because I heard good things about it, and, like, it happens to be a Reese Witherspoon book.
I think that might be part of it. It's like, I'm not part of the Reese Witherspoon book club. I'm just reading, which is, like, again, so silly, because, again, I like Reese Witherspoon. Like,
and she picks quite a few good books. Like, there are definitely books.
Oh, and the issue with the whole celebrity book club thing is that some of them are genuine and some of them are not.
Yes,
there is. What's weird is because it feels the least genuine is that the Reese Witherspoon one is a real, like, is real.
Oh, yeah.
It's she legit.
For example, like, Read with Jenna, Read with Good Morning America, even Oprah's is...
Yeah, they're not sitting there having book club.
This is like an economic idea.
Picking books, yeah. That book is going to sell millions of copies, and then they're going to move on to the next book. Like, it's not...
But yeah, no, the Reese Witherspoon one started as a thing on, like, Instagram Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then her... It's gotten less genuine, I will say.
She's busy naturally.
When something becomes a Reese Witherspoon book club, her production company buys the movie rights as part of that deal.
But she still will post on Instagram, because I know, like, I have seen authors who, like, I've read arcs of their books, and then it comes out, and it's a Reese pick, and they're, like, super excited, because she will post on Instagram, like, pictures of her with the book, talking about what she liked about it, and it still does, there is a human element there. I remember, like, they never did stickers, but Emma Watson's book club was big for a minute.
Yeah.
I was living in London at the time that she was, like, leaving them in tube stations. And it was, like, you never had a chance of actually getting it unless you happened to be in the tube station when she left it. Which,
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we were talking about, like, award winners and how, like, you, Joe, will read the Booker winners, and I know that there are people who will be like, I'm going to read all of the whatever National Book Award winners or whatever it may be. They'll go down the list, and I am definitely not that. I'm definitely a genre reader. I will read books that are, you know, categorized as literary fiction, but I'm more likely to read them if it's like, oh, I'm going to be interviewing the author. Like it's not usually something that I will just pick up on the shelf just because, oh, I think it sounds good. Like, it's more likely to be either somewhat, like, Michael recommended it or, you know, I'm going to be interviewing them or whatever. And so I'm not really, you know, I'm not really seeking out award winners or whatever. Those are sort of just bonus. But something that I do find interesting as a genre reader is when I am, you know, seeking out new, say, horror authors, right? And I'm, like, browsing, you know, advanced copies, and I'm looking to see, like, are there any authors that I recognize or are there any, like, new ones I want to seek out. If I see that they have won the Bram Stoker Award, I am more likely to pick up that book. Now, have I ever sought out specifically Bram Stoker winning? No. It's not like I pull up the list and I'm like, who's won? What? Yeah. No, absolutely not. Same with the Hugo. Absolutely not. But if I see that they have won the Hugo for sci-fi or the Bram Stoker for horror, I'm way more likely to be like, oh, I can trust that horror author. It's probably going to be a good book. Which I find interesting because for other awards, I don't really care. For other, like, prizes, it's not really going to sway me. But when it's genre, if they've won
really
a popular award in genre, I'm more likely to trust them.
Because I have absolutely no idea anything that has ever won any of the genre prizes.
And, like, I couldn't tell. The only one that I know offhand is that John Scalzi has won the Hugo a bunch of times, because we've had him here a bunch of times, and he was here one night when he had just won.
And I guess N.K. Jemisin won
three in a row. So I know, I probably couldn't name some Bram Stoker Award winners, but I know that if I'm, you know, scrolling through Edelweiss,
Make you be like, oh,
it'll make me go, I'm going to download that because that's probably going to be good if they won the Bram Stoker. Like, I don't know why I respect this random horror award so much, but I do.
It's true.
But it's so interesting to be a genre reader, bookseller, and, you know, I do think it's gotten better in that I think with the way that books have become more mainstream, which is such a silly thing to say, but you know, the fact that there is Bookstagram and Book Talk and all these things that, like, people are excited to talk about books on the internet, mm-hmm. and so therefore they are younger and they're usually not reading literary fiction, they're usually reading some sort of genre fiction. Mm-hmm. It's become more, like, socially acceptable to read things like romance and sci-fi and horror mm-hmm. and fantasy and YA and whatever. And so it is nice that I don't feel all the time like I have to defend my choices. But every once in a while, I still have that, like, oh, I just read this great romance novel. And then I, like, look around and I'm like, do I need to defend romance right now? Like, yeah. do I need to make a case for why I need a happily ever and after, like, in the middle of a pandemic?
Every so often, somebody will, like, come up and buy a romance, and I'll be like, oh my god, I really love this, and they'll be like, oh, well, I'm getting it for my girlfriend, wife,
yeah.
Whatever, friend, yeah. whatever, birthday present. Like, I don't really read this sort of stuff. And it's right. like,
it's like, okay, but, oh, like, you could, because okay. it's really good.
All right.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And, like, and this is it's just another, like, why we shouldn't gatekeep. Like, I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but it's been a while, where I had the sweetest customers come in, and they were probably, like a middle-aged couple. And I could see them, you know, hanging out in fiction, and they just looked kind of lost. And I was shelving, and I just asked what they were looking for. And the guy was so sweet, and he told me that, you know, he really, I think he, like, hadn't graduated high school, and he really wanted to go back and read some classics, because he felt like he was missing something,
yeah.
and he wanted to, like, prove himself as a reader, which I was like, oh, you sweet, sweet person, like, and so, you know, I recommended a few that were sort of, like, mm-hmm. a little bit easier to, you know, when it's your first, like, classic,
yeah.
whatever, like, you know, don't jump in with necessarily, like, Wuthering Heights or
yeah,
whatever,
like,
you know,
well,
there
yeah,
are...
Well, usually, like, the high school curriculum are, like, the tiny
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, yeah.
The
so,
Gatsby's
like,
and get, the...
Yeah, jump in with, nice like, a Gatsby or whatever. But then it was really sweet because I was telling him I had just finished one of the Pride and Prejudice adaptations that, you know, of there are... billions, but I think I had maybe just finished the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. I think mm-hmm. that was the one that I had just wrapped yeah. up. And, or maybe it was Pride by E.B. Du Bois, but whichever one it was like a YA adaptation, and it
yeah.
was like, and I was like, can I just show you this? Because I was like, I'm gonna be honest, I have a really hard time with the classics. And, like, his eyes lit up, and he was like, you do? And I was like, yes, I, the bookseller, don't read, like,
yeah.
And so we had this, like, really sweet conversation where I was, like, showing him these different, like, adaptations and just kind of describing, like, how, yeah, you can, like, you know, read one of these and then try the classic because you'll
yeah.
get the plot. Like, you'll understand what's going on mm-hmm. more and things like that. And just, and it just, like, broke my heart because he just was so... Like, he felt like he'd been kept out of this club because he hadn't read these classics, because he was telling me some of the things he did read. And, like, it sounded like he read a lot.
Yeah.
But he felt looked down on because he didn't read the classics. And I was like, my guy, no.
And the fact being that you're kind of always going to feel that way, because there's always going to be one that you didn't read.
Right.
Like, I think Matt and I have talked about this. Like, I have never finished Ulysses by James Joyce. And there is, like... Obviously, I'm a person with an MA in comparative literature, so there's, like, a certain expectation or group of people that I compare myself to, but, like, I feel lesser as, like, oh, can I actually say that I'm, like, a you know, an MA in literature without having read all of Ulysses? And I have mostly come to terms with the fact that, like, I've read a lot of the important parts. And I don't care.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's not my thing. I'm not a modernist. We all, like, I'm fine with that. There are lots of my peers who haven't read all the Shakespeare I've read because that's not their thing.
Right.
So, like, it's fine.
Right.
But there is that weird, like,
yeah.
seed of doubt being like, well, you haven't read this one. You've read, like, everything but But what about, you didn't finish Moby Dick, did you? Well, there you go. You can't talk about books now.
No longer allowed to sell books. Yeah. If you haven't read all the books, you can't sell them. Yeah. It's so silly. And I really, you know, I'm fine with the term literary fiction, but I really think we need to stop using it as a, not, you know, I use we in the royal sense. You know, I
you,
think...
Matt, you need to stop using it.
Folks need to stop using it to, in a pretentious way. Mm-hmm. In a, you know, there are books that are, you know, more literary. Like, I liked the way you described it. Like, they're just more, like, character-driven. Mm. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And that is totally, yeah.
And it is ultimately, like, what's considered, like, the great novels or the classics. It's just, like, what college teachers
Yeah. It's what white men like. Yeah. It's what Harold Bloom like. That's what it is. Yeah.
This is very off topic, but I was talking about, I was like, oh, I feel like I've seen Don Quixote everywhere. I haven't read Don Quixote yet. Yeah. And there's this translation that Reagan really liked, mm-hmm. and, you know, she handed it to me, and I was like, oh, but the foreword's by Harold Bloom. And I read, and the only reason I have beef with Harold Bloom is because in my edition of Leaves of Grass, he wrote this whole thing about how Walt Whitman was the American Jesus.
What?
And compared Walt Whitman's entire life to, like, to Christ.
He does that a lot, though. It's a weird... We're gonna have
and
to...
I was like, this oh is a whole, God. Like, a Mormon argument.
He's so weird.
I'm a little disappointed he's dead because I can never yell at him to his face. Like, that is half of why I wanted a PhD, was so I could yell at Harold Bloom. Anyway. But yeah, there are established ideas about literature, and we have to examine who established them and why they were established, and maybe question that.
And, like, stop using them to gatekeep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people are complex, and they can read whatever they want to read, and if they want to read only one genre, that's fine, and if they want to read everything under the sun, that's also fine, okay. And neither makes either one of them better or worse.
Absolutely. There's one last thing I kind of wanted, since we have Matt here, and it's kind of award season, or we're coming up to it.
Yes.
I know they just did the long list for the Booker International Prize, which I haven't read any of them, but probably will. But I know the Pulitzer's... once the short list is out. The Pulitzer's coming up. Do you have any, like, thoughts or speculation on...
So this is an interesting year for the Pulitzer, because to my knowledge, only 3 authors have ever won it twice.
Interesting. Ooh, okay.
Well, it was extra in the news recently because Colson Whitehead was the first person of color to do that. All three of them are men. But I think it's William Faulkner. Mm-hmm. I think John Updike.
Yeah.
Okay. And now Colson Whitehead.
That sounds correct. I have no idea, sounds but right. It sounds about right.
I won't fact check you.
Someone will.
Get called out on the internet.
But this year, there were a lot of people who had already won the Pulitzer Prize who had published books.
Mm-hmm.
And they are definitely the front runners. And that would be Colson Whitehead again,
mm-hmm.
With Harlem Shuffle, and Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then there's also, you know, plenty of other good books who are not written by Pulitzer Prize winning authors that have been. When I looked around, and, you know, I went on Goodreads because it's the only, like, the only people who are talking about that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, like, a people's poll, which is not exactly trustworthy. But I think what was considered number one was The Lincoln Highway by Amor Towles.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yep.
I think definitely sits on that, what did you call it, Joe? That,
Upmarket.
Upmarket fiction?
Yeah.
Which is, like, books that are serious enough to be talked about on NPR.
Yeah.
But not serious. Serious enough to get, like, a Kakutani review in the New York Times.
Okay.
And it's definitely been, like, that's so much nuance here, because it's, like, is Elizabeth Strout part of that area? Mm. She has won the Pulitzer, but there's also stuff, like, but it's all good. They're all really good books. Yeah. I think if I had to make a guess, I think it's probably going to be The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois.
Yeah.
Because that one, that's just, it's, I don't want to call it Pulitzer bait, but it's just like, it's asking for it. It's,
yeah. I have heard so many good things about
lots
that
of,
one.
It's
yeah.
really good. It's very timely. They've never won, that author's never won
yeah.
a Pulitzer.
Is it a debut? I can't remember.
I'm not sure.
And they recently loved to give him the debut off. Viet Thanh Nguyen, Sympathizer.
Mm-hmm.
That's a wonderful book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be my guess.
Yeah, Love Song of W.E.B. Du Bois is a debut.
Cool.
Novel, at least. They're a poet elsewhere. So, yeah, that would be great if some new people won. I remember that in 2020, the Booker did like half their shortlist was debuts.
Cool.
And that was a fun year because there were a lot of people you weren't aware of. And
yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I am never good at speculating on things at all. Like, you know, if you ask me the Booker, I'll be like, well, this person who was on one of the long lists has a new book out, so probably them, but I don't, like,
yeah,
like that To Paradise probably will make it on a list, the long list at least. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's since it's published in January, it wasn't going to be considered for the Pulitzer.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that's going to work with the Booker.
It should work for the Booker. I don't know
I don't think it'll count as international because it's English.
No.
Yeah.
But if it's English originally, it depends on when it was published in the UK. That's what the Booker is based on.
Gotcha.
Is UK publication. Anyway, but.
Awesome. Well, this was a blast, and obviously we all have a lot of feelings about books and genres and categorizing things, and ultimately it boils down to books are great, and you should
read them. And whatever you enjoy, just read it, and sometimes maybe go a little outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
But you don't have to like it. Like, you can go outside your comfort zone and read the Pulitzer Prize winner and be like, not the vibe, I'm good.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Cool. I know that we have a bunch of events coming up. I don't have them pulled up on my phone right now because I can't remember which ones have actually been announced and which ones I'm just privy to.
I have that issue with printing the posters.
But keep an eye on our events calendar. We actually have an events email that goes out. You can sign up for it on our website. And you get notified before anyone else when we book an event, which is cool. Mm. And we are very cautiously going to try a few in-person events. We're just starting with a couple just to see how it goes, figure out, to see if we can remember how to do it, basically. So that will be this spring. You'll start to see some of those announced, so keep an eye on that. Other than that, just a quick reminder about our partnership with Libre FM. Listeners who are new to Libre FM can receive 3 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. It's a fantastic deal. You should totally take advantage of it. I converted a customer to Libre FM the other day, and I was very proud of myself.
I love slipping in the bookmarks.
Delightful. Yes,
yeah.
It's so much fun. I love it. We love them. And you should, too. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. And you should. If there is a literary topic you want us to talk about or rant about, please email us.
Absolutely. If you have an idea, Ryan and I are just make things up as we go.
We, like 3 days before we record, we go, hey, what do you want to talk about this month? So, you know, please, by all means, please email us. We would love to hear from you. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put all those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks.
Bye! Bye.